Welcome to the Rehab Rebels podcast. Are you a rehab professional ready to transition to an alternative career? Hear inspiring stories from others just like you and learn the best ways to bridge your career gap. This podcast has you covered. Now here's your host, doctor of physical therapy and podcaster, Tanner Welsh.
Welcome back to another episode of Rehab Rebels. For this episode and moving forwards, I'm going to do a little bit more of an introduction of the guests and reasons why it might be good to listen by capturing and presenting universal themes or relatable concepts from the individual guest's particular story. With today's guest, Stephen, if you ever felt as a rehab professional undervalued financially with stagnant financial prospects at a largely undervalued pay rate, then you're going to want to listen to this episode with Stephen and how he met his family's financial goals a decade sooner than if he were to be a full-time clinician exclusively. With that, I'm going to give a little bit of background before we bring Stephen on. He was born and raised in Columbus, Ohio. Briefly spent a few years as a high school teacher in Kentucky before attending and graduating from physical therapy school at the University of Kentucky. He is currently the sole physical therapist for a local Indian tribe, as well as the COO of Ergonaut. And he graduated with his DPT in 2011 and began working in the outpatient ortho setting for a few years, obtained his board certified orthopedics, and immediately began travel physical therapy along with his wife, intending to travel for only 2 years, but ended up traveling for around 7, and then the last 3 with their daughter with them. That's pretty exciting and unique. So welcome, Stephen, to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on and sharing your story with us. I got to ask, how was the doing travel physical therapy with a daughter there for a few years? What was that like?
Oh man, it was great. It was great. We're pretty firm believers that, you know, your life doesn't end when you have kids. It's just, they're joining your family. You know, you don't have to totally change your lifestyle just because you have a little one, you know, tagging along with you. And right from the start, we tried to keep that up. And we had her in Durango, Colorado. And then I think she was 3 weeks old. We moved to Kentucky, you know, and then we were there for 5 months as travelers and then all the way back to the Bay Area in California. And she's the best little travel buddy ever. She can go anywhere. It's great. Start them early. They don't know any different.
Right. Where did you guys stay? You know, when you had your daughter, what settings were you staying at? I know some people, you know, carry a fifth wheel or they rent out places. What worked for you guys with your family?
Oh, yeah. Good question. We actually got this a lot. So we chose to go the route of just finding unfurnished apartments ourselves. We're pretty good at the seek and find. And we actually, one of our little side hustles when we're traveling is we'd like to furniture flip. And so, you know, we get these unfurnished places, go get some used furniture someplace. And, you know, we're a little bit creative and dress it up, make it look nice, use it for however long the contract is, and then sell it. And it actually worked out really well because then we could travel in, you know, I just have a Tundra and my wife has a little Subaru and we didn't tow anything and we'd have to bring furniture. We had a little bedding situation that we really liked, like the Cadillac of camping mattresses. It was amazing. So we actually enjoyed using that. So we didn't need a bed. It was great. I mean, so that's what we ended up doing. But a lot of people go agency can find you housing or you can do a furnished finder. But we chose to on our own unfurnished and then flip some stuff and generally it paid for itself or made us a little fun money.
For sure. That's really scrappy and pretty clever. So yeah, nice. What this ties back into the opening comments with the financial aspect behind our careers, but what's your story behind the first sense of awareness that things weren't quite right within your rehab career?
Yeah, I would say it's probably about after the first year or so. My goals when I got out of PT school was I wanted to become an OCS, an out fellow, and then own my own clinic. You know, I was purely an outpatient guy. That's all I wanted to do. Athletes is my background. And within that first year, I worked in mentorship with our two clinic owners and their fantastic clinic ownership. And then we started talking about maybe buying into the practice after I traveled. So I had gotten into this job. They understood in a couple of years, my wife and I want to travel for a little bit. And it was going to work out perfect because one of the owners was in his 60s or so, and he was going to retire. And the other one was 20 years younger. And so it'd be perfect. You know, I leave for a couple of years, buy him out, and great transition. So we started looking at the numbers. And this whole time I'm thinking, oh, I'm not being paid what I'm worth. You know, I need even more experience. I'm going to make so much more money. And then I see what insurance companies are paying for our services. And I'm just like, there's nothing left in the pot to pay me more. It totally changed my perspective. I used to have this little bit of predatory clinic owners, you know, just abusing and abusing new hires. And that does happen for sure. But once I made that realization of my ceiling is so low, even owning my own practice, unless I turn into a PT mill, which, you know, and I'm sure probably 90% of your outpatient audience is working at one because that's what they all have to be at this point. And that's not the way any of us were taught to treat in school. So that was when I realized there's got to be something different. It's got to be a better route than this.
For sure. And so that's where it goes back to meeting your financial goals with you and your family. When you hit that point, it was, oh man, this isn't what I thought what it was. So then what happened? What did you end up pivoting to, or what was your new direction after that?
Well, that was a big driver behind us traveling for much longer. The original plan was 2 years because we didn't realize it was going to be so great. And so we took our, this is crazy. We took our very first travel jobs in home health in the Bay Area. And mind you, we took jobs making, it was like 200 to 250 a week after tax, more than I would bring home in 2 weeks perm here in Colorado. And we were stoked. Little did we know that, I forget what it was, $1,600 a week or something. In the Bay Area, home health is probably $400 or $500 a week less than what we should have been making. But we had, you know, we're oblivious. We're new travelers. There was no blogs out there back when we started. And we were just so stoked. We thought we were making tons of money. And anyways, it was great. And that's where we're like, there's so much more out there. You know, I mean, these larger companies, they have different negotiated rates, and home health pays really, really well for travelers, especially. And then that started us realizing, like, oh, if we do this a little longer, we're out of our cumulative 300 grand in debt that the two of us had, because she's a therapist as well. So that was the first moment we realized we should probably keep traveling, period. Maybe not necessarily home health, but traveling, because there's generally a little bit more pay there. And they had explored that option for 7.5 years.
Okay. Since you did quite a bit of traveling, I got to ask, what are some things that you liked about the travel therapy and some things that you didn't like about the travel therapy?
There's really nothing, almost every aspect of it is, it's great. If you're adventurous, you like to see new places. If you like to know, you're the person who doesn't want to necessarily do the touristy thing. You want to find the little locals bar, it's perfect because you're there for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, or even 12. So you get to get that insider locals perspective. That was, I think, the best part is, you know, really discovering different places that we're at, because you're there for so long. You're not just in and out in a weekend or even a week. I think that's the best part. The only real negative was the community. We got to the point where we had a little group. And so we jumped a couple jobs following this group of friends. And that was awesome. But yeah, then life takes you different directions. And every time you change a spot, you are looking for new friends and reconnecting, which again, for a lot of people is awesome. They love it. And we got pretty good at it. But, you know, starting over and finding a community each time is a little bit of a challenge. And at the end, I think that's part of why we came back home. We had a 3-year-old at that point, and we, for whatever reason, our friend group here became closer with them here while we were, every time we'd come back home, it was just a closer bond. So I don't know, we just got lucky with that. We didn't grow apart. Yeah, I think that'd be the negative. That'd be the only negative. But, you know, there's stuff like the different meetup groups, and I was playing in these little pickup soccer games, just trying to meet people, and yeah, it worked out pretty well.
Well, good. What were the different settings that you tried and or really liked or gravitated towards?
Home health is the best. Quality of life and pay. When you look at those two, especially when you're in a new area, because you're driving around, you're driving past the little market that you would have never seen on Yelp or whatever. The pay is the best. You're generally done with patients in a 6-hour time frame or so. And then, you know, document from wherever you want. We lived in the Central Coast of California for a while, and we'd go to a vineyard and have a wine tasting and type it on our computers doing documentation. It's pretty great. We did outpatient. Outpatient pays really well up in Alaska because there's no PT schools. That was a great location wise. That's amazing up there. And then I did a SNF in Kentucky at one point. It was horrible. I won't work SNF again. It was too depressing for me personally. Yeah, I think that's just those three, but we did a lot of home health.
I've talked with a few people about it as well. And that's what I've heard is really the downside is the starting over with the new relationships every time you have to move. There's no grounded network of friends or whatever, because it's always changing every time you're moving. But everything else seems to be pretty great. And for home health, I'm still currently a home health physical therapist and really do enjoy it and love the flexible schedule. And it's one of the higher paying settings. So 100% on all that. You did some travel therapy, you come back, and I'm curious, what are some other, and we'll get to your COO position, but what are some other things that you guys were doing to reach your financial goals faster? The travel therapy totally makes sense. And then you come back. So what were some other things that maybe you tried and or maybe you're still doing?
Yeah. So the big one for us was we knew our little town here in Colorado is where we wanted to end up. So we spent 2 years before our little girl was born. And then we didn't buy our home until she was one. So we spent 3 years looking for the right property to possibly settle down here back in Colorado. And part of the reason we took so much time is, again, we know we love this area. Outpatient physical therapy doesn't pay really well. Home health, it's so rural that you're driving all day. And the way their contracts are structured, it just doesn't make it as great as home health in a little town where you knock out your five or six patients in a day and you only have 10 minutes between each one. Here, you might go an hour to your next patient. So we knew our jobs weren't necessarily going to make us meet our goals. And so we were looking for the right property. Things that we're really wanting is something that had some sort of income potential as a fail safe. Maybe it has multiple lots so we could split the lots. And if we had to sell one off as a cushion, if things were harder coming back home than we anticipated, we didn't really know how it was going to be. And we're both PTs and we're coming into a small town. So that's two people looking for a very small handful of jobs. So that was a big one. So we bought our place in 2018, and then we immediately began Airbnb-ing it out while we were still on contract. So we bought the home in 18 and then took jobs in the Bay Area really for the next 2 years. We were in and out, but pretty much for 2 years. So for pretty much 2 years, we were in California while Airbnb-ing out our house. And so we were able to have someone else paying our mortgage while we're still making the good travel money. And it started with that of realizing we can do something on the side. We can leverage what we already own to help us out financially a little bit. And then when we came back here permanently in summer of 2020, we were obviously living in the house. We couldn't Airbnb that out. But part of what we ended up doing was renovating our garage, which initially was a log cabin. The family who built this house was living in this log cabin, which now is the garage. So it had all the guts, you know, it had all the everything we needed. And so we just updated it and it looked beautiful. I mean, we did hire a lot of it out. But anyway, so we have a guest there right now. We've been Airbnb-ing that out straight.
It's nonstop, huh?
Yeah, it's been nonstop. And so, you know, part of the reason, a big, big reason that was so great is coming back home with a three-year-old in our little town. I think our PRN job that my wife got quoted for was maybe $10 an hour more than what childcare was going to cost us. So why work your butt off to have someone else raising your child? And so if we could offset that $10 an hour, which is a no-brainer for an apartment. So yeah, she was able to stay home and work. She worked part-time. She's got a little bit of a remote job through a home health agency that was trying to do new things during COVID, you know. And so she did that for a couple of years. And actually just recently, within the last 2 months, went back into the clinic part-time herself.
How did you guys actually manage to rent out or do the Airbnb while you guys were actually living in a whole other state? Because, you know, you got to clean up after somebody and then get it ready for the next person and all that. How did all that work when you guys were actually living in another state?
We were really fortunate. We built a great relationship with a local lady who is our cleaner. And so she basically served as property manager. I mean, I think we had something hit the house and broke a piece of siding, or I don't remember what happened, but you know, she's, oh, my boyfriend does this stuff and we'll fix it real quick. And it was awesome. And we lucked out. And we had some friends. 1 year we were back in California and they got 5 feet of snow on our roof. You can't leave that on your roof. And I don't know how much you're familiar with snow, but friends orchestrated everything and got people to come and shovel our freaking roof while we were gone. So we just managed relationships. So it was all about having those relationships. And that's what worked well for us. And we, you know, we had to structure our rentals. We had to really communicate with her on the schedule. Hey, we can't do a same day turnover. In fact, for her, I think she needed 2 days just because she had other clients, which now that we're here on the property, we'll do a same day turnover and keep that unit filled as much as we can. That's an extra $200. Yeah. So it's all about just managing, finding the right people. You know, it's like any business, right? Finding the right people, managing those relationships.
Okay. So you're back and you guys got the Airbnb stuff going and you're done traveling. Where do you get to your COO position and how is all that going for you? How did that start? What's the story there?
Started with LinkedIn. So I was on LinkedIn and, you know, I've done some clinic director stuff and managing clinics in the past. So I had that experience before. So basically what happened was building relationships. I connected with this gentleman on LinkedIn who was doing some pretty interesting things with the UK School of Engineering and ergonomic field. And, you know, I was just curious and we had a lot of the same connections because we both went to University of Kentucky while he taught and I went there as a student and transitioned into a phone call and we just hit it off. And where he was taking this ergonomics company was more into the broader safety and wellness field. And that was sort of my opportunity to possibly leverage our skills as therapists, right? Essentially what he was building out at the time before I was anything was a platform to help do ergonomic evaluations super fast. So essentially 4 or 5 times faster than what you could do in person. I did ergonomic evaluations out here. We're pretty rural. So there's a really big backpack company that's their home office is near here. I won't share their name or anything, but the biggest in backpacking. They're out in the Four Corners area. I did their ergonomic evaluations, paper and pencil, ruler, all this stuff. And it took forever. I have no idea if it was any good. I just sent them this report with a bunch of dimensions and, hey, get a desk that's this tall and a chair that's these dimensions. Here, you can go HR person, go buy this stuff. And now they have to go look up all the specs. And anyways, essentially what we were able to, this gentleman was able to put together, again, before I had any role in helping them, an app that just does it all. It looks at all the factors, the ergonomic factors, finds what's safe. And then for examples, we include this chair will work for you. This desk will work, this everything, boom, boom. There's no thinking, right? And so it's just easy. It's fast. And from what I understand from our testing, again, this is not my field, but from our testing, it's more effective than a professional paper and pencil just relying on their own expertise because you can't skip steps. It's standardized, right? It's using the power of technology. So that's what he's building out. And man, physical therapists need to start using this stuff because at the same time, I was in California, again, side hustle all the time. We're starting to work with Luna, if you're familiar with LunaCare.
Yeah, definitely.
They're nationwide now, but they were nobody. I mean, me and 2 or 3 other people were their initial physician liaison team going out to doctors. You like talking to the doc, hey, give us your patients. They were desperate for anybody. They took me to help them do that stuff. It was crazy. And so I'm like, man, this side hustle, I'm already treating people in their office. I'm already treating people in home, in the gym. Why don't physical therapists take this tool and we're already going there, go to their office, go to their gym, go to their whatever, boom, boom, boom. You do their evaluation and then maybe we can prevent some of these problems that we're treating, or we can get them out of pain and then keep them out of pain while they're working. And then of course, COVID hits and everyone's this dual workstation employee where now we have twice as many workstations, which you've twice the ergonomic risk factors. So there's a big potential there. So that was the initial, okay, I see the big picture. I want to get involved. I want to get this to PTs because these ergonomic evaluations you can do with our tool, you can do it in like 20 minutes if you're not chatty. It's all about personality, right? So yeah, some people are going to take longer. And in certain markets, if you're in a big city, you're looking at $400 a pop. That is way better than the $72 a visit that United Healthcare pays physical therapists here in Durango per session. I mean, that's ridiculous. And that's for a whole session. So there's just a lot of potential. So that's when I got involved.
Okay. So you see the big picture and see the importance of this. How did you start and then get to the COO position? It sounds like maybe you did some consulting and worked with them initially, and then they just really loved what you did. And tell me.
All the famous stories of startups, you know, in the garage and everyone's doing everything. I was in on this all hands meeting we had and they share this document and then they make this statement that this is our marketing document and we're going to launch it. We're going to share it immediately. And I'm looking at it and it's like a data sheet features. It's a list of, I don't know how else to describe it. If you bought like an old school computer and you look on the back and it's got this much RAM and this much boom, boom, boom. And it's just a bullet list. Long story short, it was not a marketing piece. It was a data sheet. And so I was stupid. And I said, that's not a great tool. I think we should do something different. And this, she now our CEO, but I forget what she was at the time. she's worked in sales and marketing her whole career in tech. And yeah, this is not what we need. And so the founders, go ahead and make it.
Sure. Sounds good.
Okay. I guess I'll do it. I'll give it a shot. And so that's how it started. I mean, I was just as a safety consultant, a little bit at the physical therapy market. You know, we've got a product that we're hoping to get more home safety related. So I was in talks about that. And then all of a sudden I'm writing every single word on our website and I'm facilitating. Now I manage our LinkedIn. I manage all this other operational stuff. I started training some of the other people on it little by little. So it's not your typical route that I would say 99% of COOs get into. You know, they all have massive, massive amounts of experience. And we're an early stage startup where I have the role because no one else can do it, right? We're just too early on.
For sure. What are the practical, non-obvious skills that make you a great fit for this role as COO?
I think as a clinician, you're already trained to see patterns and to see how things connect. And that's sort of, I would say, if I have one real skill, I'm not super smart, I'll be really honest, but A, I'll work harder than almost everybody else. I was a kid in PT school who made the study guide for everyone. And I didn't make it for everyone. I made it for myself. And then I just shared because I needed to put in the work, right? And I needed the attention to detail. I think being able to see how those seemingly disparate things can connect and possibly bring about something positive, right? So I would say that'd be the most non-obvious skill, that the one thing I have going for me, really. Yeah. But, you know, I had background in, again, marketing clinics. I worked with Luna early on, like I was saying, and their physician liaison team. So going out and talking to doctors and explaining how to tell that story a little bit. I think everyone should have some sales and marketing experience. And that's one of the areas where physical therapy school just is terrible. I mean, we had no business training, none. Whereas most of us are going to be working at private clinics and possibly managing.
For sure. What do you love most about your new reality? Hello, Rehab Rebels. This is a quick, short announcement to give you an update on what is to come in the new year, starting in January 2024. We're going to be releasing solo episode content, starting with the stressful work environment and building out from there, and all these little mini transitions that are involved with transitioning from a work or job that we don't like and getting to one that we do like or even love. And the content is going to be in one of three buckets. The first one is career transitions, life alignment, personal and professional growth and development. The second one is going to be around finances involved with these different lifestyle and career transitions. The third one is about business entrepreneurial topics. And so with that, happy holidays to you and yours, safe travels, and we will see you in the new year.
Because I'm still full-time working with patients, I have the benefit of that sort of intrinsic value, helping people, getting them out of pain. I really enjoy this population that I'm with. I work for an indigenous population. It's a tribe out here. Something I had no experience at all with, being a suburb kid from Ohio, you know? And so I have that, but then also like to change it up. I'm doing this stuff with Ergonauts. We've got a product line that we're hoping to launch here in the next 18 months that literally would be 100 million people. I mean, truly impacting people on a humongous scale. And so it has the potential of both aspects. I think that's the best part. And then also, honestly, with that Airbnb, it gives us a little bit of flexibility. So my wife and I, we took our little one and spent a month in Costa Rica last year to learn Spanish and do some search. And we didn't quite come out even, but it wasn't thousands and thousands of dollars gone because we rented our whole place out for a month. And that covers a mortgage plus half our trip.
Sounds like a win-win for sure.
It's work though, right? It takes time. We've been doing it for a little while, so we've got it dialed in, right? I dislike people thinking, A, there's ever anything such as passive income. I've sold courses. We were some of the original travel therapy bloggers, right? So blogging before, you know, your social media influencers were like PT Adventures. It's still up there. There's 100 and something articles. If you're ever interested in travel, it's a great resource. Still, it's all evergreen. It's great. We speak at the travel convention every year, but that's not passive either, right? So when I stopped actively updating the site, guess what goes away? All the income that site drives. So there's no such thing as passive income. And then, you know, things take work and it takes time to get good at it. So yeah, we're in a pretty good spot now, but been doing Airbnb for 4 or 5 years now, so we've figured it out.
For sure. I'm glad we were talking about this passive income, not really passive income. I'm curious, what are the different revenue streams that you have that you're comfortable sharing? We've talked about it, like, I think at least three. And I'm curious which one you feel gives the most value for your time and return on your time.
When you look at the ceiling, the startup obviously has the most potential, right? We're still very firmly in development. So, you know, I've been here with them for 4 years and we're still in development. The process is totally different than people, but the hustle mentality is real. And the hustle is not go hard, go fast. It's don't stop. My wife gets frustrated because she's like, you're on all these meetings, you're on all this stuff. When are you guys going to be bought? That's not the goal. The goal is to make something that people just love. But ultimately, yeah, that has the highest ceiling. I don't know about as far as other rewards. We really enjoy being Airbnb hosts on site. We like meeting people. Our town is outdoorsy. It's in the mountains. It's hard to get to. It's a Lex for people like us, you know, who want to get out and be in the mountains and then come home and have a nice place to sleep and then get out again. The guy right now, he leads expeditions as his job. That's his whole business, is running expeditions. He has an insane life. So we do really enjoy that. We have two Airbnbs on the property. One is a vintage Airstream, and that is a huge pain in the butt. It's super cute. Anything old construction is just, every guest, we're worried about leaks. We're worried about various problems. Mice, you know, because we're out in the middle of nowhere. The apartment is fantastic. I would say one Airbnb on the property is quite rewarding. I mean, people just thank us all the time for having us. We're like, you guys are the ones paying us all this money to stay here. I really enjoy patient care. I guess because I've been out 12 years now doing it for a while, a little bit of the luster's wore off, you know, but I still really enjoy it. I don't think I'll ever stop treating patients. I'm just not going to be doing it full time.
And I got to ask, with the tribe that you're working with, is that funded through the state or the county? Is that how you get paid, or is this your own business, or how is all of the financials behind that work?
That's actually a great little discussion to have. So you can be your own LLC and get hired by whatever the tribe is that you would happen to want to work for. My current position, our tribe took over their own healthcare. So if they have the capability and the desire, tribes being autonomous, they can do that, sovereign. And so our tribe took over their own healthcare. They manage it themselves. And so I work for this tribe. I am not an IHS employee. I'm not a federal employee. So there's about an hour and a half away, there's the other clinic that's closest to us, and they're all federal. It's all IHS employees, which has definite benefits, pension, and they have, I guess, great vacation and the pay is fair. But my particular situation is different. So I just work for this one entity.
Okay. So is that how you are set up then, as an LLC or a sole proprietor, and they just pay you directly?
No, I'm a regular employee.
Of their health system or?
Yeah. So this particular tribe is broken into two funds, right? So they have what they call a permanent fund and then growth fund. So they have an investment branch of the tribe and then the operations side. So under operations is all the services that tribal members and anyone tribal qualified gets. So I can see anyone who's IHS eligible. That's part of the deal, but I'm paid by my tribe. It's called the Southern Ute Indian Tribe. I'm paid by the Southern Ute Indian Tribe. It's just like any corporate job. I deal with HR, we deal with all that. And so it's just a regular business.
Cool. Thanks for explaining that. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. I thought I was going to be an IHS employee, to be honest.
For some closing questions for rehab professionals who maybe are looking for some additional income or maybe another stream of income, what are some tips that, or, you know, from your experience that you are willing to share and to maybe help them get started, or what direction to go?
Yeah, well, I think what matters most is what your interests are. You're a clinician looking to make a little extra money and you don't mind being in the clinic. PRN is an easy trade. You don't have to learn any skill. You're just trading some time for some money, right? Doing the concierge thing. If you're a little bit business oriented and you're a little bit entrepreneurial, starting an LLC is $50 in most states and 2 hours of your time, and you've got yourself a business, right? You know, obviously our product with the Ergonauts is perfect for clinicians trying to work a little bit extra, but you're going to have to be a bit entrepreneurial at first. Side hustle, drumming up your own business, find your own clients. Initially, you know, right now we're eventually going to be siphoning clients to our evaluators, but we're not doing that right now. So that's a great option. Again, trading less time for more money. And then if you happen to own a property, leveraging what you have already, I think is so powerful. So if you've got a 2-bedroom apartment, if you need to for a little while, rent that other apartment out. You could probably pay your entire rent, especially the way rental prices have gone up lately. You could probably pay your whole rent with someone else. And then you're just sitting there rent-free, take that money and put it into whatever it is you want to put it into. Again, what do you want? What do you like to do? We're creative and we like projects a little bit. If I had to start again and I didn't own a property, I would probably pick some vacant land and I'd put a yurt or I'd put a tiny home on it. And then I'd rent that out side hustle. As much crap as Airbnb has been getting in the press lately, the short-term rental, they're talking about all crashing or whatever. If you're in a desirable spot and you can create something that's unique, again, a little bit of creativity, the business will keep coming. You just have to be able to provide something different. You can't be these slumlord Airbnb places that you keep seeing online. I wish I had a better, more concise, do this one thing answer to your question. But the key is you got to find something you like to do and you can stick with it for a while, because if you can't stick with it, it's not going to be. We ran a blog that I mentioned before and that was awesome. Paid for our kitchen renovation. You know, we made tens of thousands of dollars on it. We didn't make a penny for over 2 years. You got to put in the time. You got to put in, well, you know, with podcasts, right? I mean, you got to put in the time.
Right.
It's a hustle and you have to like it. And eventually it's going to be worth it. So I think finding what you really enjoy, you know, in your case, if you hated podcasting, there's no way you're going to put in the time to build up an audience and to provide enough value where you're going to get sponsors, or you just got to find what you like. You don't have to love it. I'm not a big fan of the big only do what you're passionate about, because that's tricky. Because say you're super passionate about pottery and then you make that your business and now you're stuck freaking throwing pots all day long and you're just, your hands are aching and hate it. So you don't always want to follow the passion. Find something that you like enough to stick with it. I think that'd be my only real useful piece of advice.
I think you're spot on there for sure. I'll chime in here too and just, you know, let people know everything we've talked about on the episode will be in the show notes page to dive in deeper. And something that we're doing on the Rehab Rebels is actually going to be exploring other side hustles and streams of income and talking about those things. And a quick one that you mentioned right off the bat was doing PRN stuff and with Luna. And we actually have a episode with Melissa about Luna, and we got some content on the website already about it for those that are interested in maybe looking into that and working for them PRN. And then Ergonauts as well. If those individuals or physical therapists are looking to dive into that and do some of that as a side hustle, that's an option as well.
I didn't get a chance to mention it before, but we'd love to throw you and your audience a code and get them $100 off the training. Honestly, my big goal is getting as many people out there out of financial straits as possible. And if I can help other therapists out, it'd be great. I'm sorry I didn't mention that earlier. We'd definitely love to do that for you for sure.
Thanks, Stephen. Yeah, we'll include all that stuff in the show notes so people can hop on board and, you know, get the benefits of that and progress further with you guys if it's a good fit for them. But yeah, I'm really hoping to expand really what we're talking about out on the podcast and also in the content on the website. Thank you for coming on and sharing your journey and some of your insights. I really appreciate having you come on.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Rehab Rebels podcast. If this podcast was useful, make sure to hit that subscribe button and leave a review. For more information about transitioning to alternative careers, head to rehabrebels.org or follow us on Instagram @rehabrebelspodcast. We'll see you next time.